From Tally to Cali,
it's time
to wake up!
Wake up! Wake up!
WarChant.com is your ultimate seminal sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant, presented by
Vitamin Energy.
The vitamins.
The energy.
Now here's WarChant.com's Azan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark. Wake up! It's Wake Up WarChant, presented by Vitamin Energy. Coming up on today's show, newcomers hit the mic. And they impress, as usual. Generational quarterback, will it come from the portal or from the preps? And we're generating discussion sparked by Cummins. Wake Up WarChant, presented by Vitamin Energy. VitaminEnergy.com, promo code WarChant BOGO. WarChant B-O-G-O. Corey, were you guzzling Vitamin Energy Focus Plus as you troubleshooted your new device for your fancy headset that you've had? I was struggling over here, but you figured it out somehow.
Yeah, I just restarted the computer. Okay. It's like blowing into the cartridge back in 1991. It worked perfectly. I just restarted, and here we are. I hope people can hear me better. I hope I'm not too loud. No. I hope I'm not soft anymore. I hope I'm perfect volume for you guys.
Oh, full, rich sound.
Good.
Your bandwidth, everybody, between your ears. Make that full and rich. VitaminEnergy.com. Promo code again, WarChantBogo. Buy one, get one free. Florida State alums. Helping out Florida State fans with that promo code over at Vitamin Energy. So check them out. Shake it and take it. WarChant.com, the ultimate Seminole sports source. Not only do you get all the good stuff from Ira and Corey, and again, shout out to Ira and his strength and conditioning summer series where he profiled everybody that works, I don't want to say like under, you know, Josh Storms, but you know how things work in corporate structures, ladders, hierarchies, everybody. But you got a really good insight into what makes these guys tick and what makes – this football team probably to a large degree tick because they're being led by guys like that as well as everybody like Mike Norvell and the coaching staff. So you get that with WarChant.com. You also get cool things like discounts at Garnet and Gold. Stay tuned next week for an announcement on that for a potential discount over at Garnet and Gold. 45 years? Is it 40 years? 45 years we tweeted out the other day, Corey? It's incredible. Locally owned Florida State shop. So if you're going to buy stuff, buy it from them. Corey Clark, how are you, man? Other than accomplishing these heroic tasks of technology standing in our way.
I am great. I was just about to sneeze when you asked me that.
Ooh,
so, but I
that.
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thanks for asking, buddy.
So rumor is Brady Clark might have a different look by the time everybody's listening to this. Are we going to get a before and after? Maybe don't tweet it, but can we get like put on the Renegade Room of the WarChant.com message boards? Can we see
buddy,
what it's gonna look like?
I have done a before and after, and it just looks like the before twice. it's crazy. No, so it won't be a different look. He's not getting a buzz cut. He still wants it long and floppy. Okay. So it's just going to be like a cleanup, a very expensive cleanup, but it's just going to be a cleanup haircut that he will – for the crews. So he can look, you know, so he can just have the sun pounding into his face. And he might be able to see the sun if he can wipe just a little bit of the hair out of his eyes. So, hey, man, you know, I think it's a crazy look. I think he's got a nice face. He should show it off, but he doesn't want to. So more power to him. He's got hair. Who am I to judge?
Exactly.
He wants to use it while he's got it.
Yes.
I understand that.
Yes.
That's his argument to me. But still, yes. I would like it to be a little more. Just a little cleaner. I mean, I'm not asking him to be a Marine or even the Beatles. Just somewhere in between where he is now and the Beatles.
Do you take him to like a commercial chop shop, or does he go to some like fancy foo-foo
No,
like
it's
salon?
A fancy one. It's one of Stephanie's friends.
Ooh, okay.
That does it. She has her own salon. Very nice. Helped with the wedding, too. So, yeah, good stuff.
Okay. Speaking of good stuff, I mean, you know, go back and listen to a show. I don't know. 5 months ago when we spoke to newcomers, go listen to a show from a year ago when we spoke to newcomers, different names, same story, just impressive young men, good dudes. Let's start off with Jacob Rizzi. We spoke to Jacob Rizzi, Ricky Knight Jr., Makai Danzy. Apologies to Makai. I called him Micah probably several times when he was
you
a
did?
Recruit. Not during the press conference, when he was a recruit with Michael. Makai Danzy, as well as Elijah Moore, who I think was a real star, but we'll bury the lead to a certain degree. Jacob Rizzi, cronyism at work, though, Corey. He was my dude, but now that I know that he's an absolute favor from his coach Mickey Fine to Alex Atkins, not nearly as stoked. I'm kidding, obviously. So apparently, if you didn't hear the interview, everybody, his offensive coordinator, Jacob Rizzi in Harvard, Mickey Fine, actually coached Alex Atkins, the Florida State offensive coordinator, when Alex was playing college ball. So that's how like that relationship kind of started. He's got 2 years to play. And shockingly, and I'm not saying that any sarcasm, Corey, he started right tackle in 2022, 10 games. He started left tackle in 2023 for 10 games. But he's here to compete for a spot on the interior. He's got 2 years. And there's a lot of guys ahead of him, Corey, but he did not seem fazed by that revelation at all. Really said the right things, it felt like to me.
When I was listening to that interview, and I didn't go, shout out to Ira and Aslan. I mean, I was Zooming it. I was watching it and transcribing. But I'm like, you know what? I'm not driving 35 minutes. What's the point? I could do it all from right here, the same things I'd be doing.
Save the planet. Yep,
exactly right. Exactly right. It made the commute a little easier for someone else. It was one less car on the road. I got the impression, okay, I didn't realize he was here for 2 years. But if he's got 2 years, he's 22, the way he talked, he's like, you know, maybe I'll go to the NFL after this year. But it wasn't like, he certainly wasn't talking, in my eyes, like this is my last year here no matter what.
Like Keon Coleman, pretty much.
He kept leaving the door open. Or that he, you know, was out of service, like he was out of eligibility. It came up multiple times that he could be back again next year, which to me is like, okay, they don't really seem to recruit centers. He did say he was practicing at center. He did obviously say that he was planning on competing in the interior and left it kind of vague. Maybe that's your starting center in 25. That's my thought. But there's just not – where is he going to go, Aslan? What part of the – is he really going to beat out a kid from Alabama and the kid from Florida for the guard spot, Bryson Estes, guys they like, guys that have been here.
Julian Armella.
Is he going to come in and win one of those spots at a guard position? He's certainly not going to beat out Maurice Smith at center, but he's practicing center. He said he was practicing snapping the ball. So to me, man, all right. I feel like maybe that's their emergency plan if Maurice Smith gets hurt. And it's also a nice guy to have in your back pocket heading into the next season if you're looking for, if you don't have to go look for a center, you might have one on campus.
Yeah, see, I don't know if I'm contrarian, but I think I'm like on the opposite of that. You know, a lot of people might think, you know, hey, if he was really serious about this, he would have got here earlier, but he explained the whole Harvard process and how you have to kind of finish things out before you can transfer out of there. So that's why he couldn't be here in the spring.
Well, and Skull and Bones wouldn't let him leave until the late May, right?
Right. I wanted to ask him about his house. Apparently that's like a thing. Like you're assigned to a house when you're a Harvard student, but we got wrapped up because we had him for 11 minutes and 27 seconds, and God forbid we would have kept him for 13 minutes.
Well, we'll get him again. We're not at Georgia or A&M. Right, right. We'll get him again, Aslan. You can get him one-on-one and ask him all those types of questions. We actually could get him on the show and ask him everything but football questions about Harvard.
Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we can do that before you get on your big boat.
Well, that's going to be – you better hurry up. It's coming soon.
But when I asked him that question, I was just like, listen, like there's so many guys ahead of you. Like you have 2 years. Like, does that change your calculus for coming? And he's like, no, if I had 1 year, it wouldn't change it. But to me, the way he talked about, he's like, I do have 2 years, but he's like, my plan is like knock everybody's socks off and do enough in 1 year. So like to me, it definitely sounds like I understand like having him in your back pocket if you're Norvell and Atkins and you're kind of, you know, road mapping this thing out to a way. But I would imagine the way he talked to me seems like I feel like I can compete and get on this field and I can probably do enough. To you know, move on. But you know, he also did compare himself more so to Demetri Emanuel, and obviously Meech was here for multiple years, so maybe that's more in line. But I don't know, the way I'd interpret it was he certainly feels that he can win a starting job here this year.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be weird if he said otherwise as a 22-year-old fifth-year college football player. He's like, I'm just going to learn the ropes.
He could admit it, though. Like, listen, man, this is a huge jump up in competition. I'm getting here late. I just want to do whatever I can do to help the team out and learn and grow. Like he could have said something that was kind of conciliatory about like, no, I'm not ready for this, you know, without having to be totally defeatist. And he
but
did
at
not
the
take
same
that
time, route. Right? He's an FCS transfer. It doesn't mean he can't play.
All conference.
There's been plenty of examples that have come and play, but there's also plenty of examples of guys that leave Ivy League schools and don't play at this level.
Mikey Russo.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So you know, there's no expectations. I don't think – we probably spent too much time talking about him anyway in the scheme of what – well, just in the context of what he'll end up being for this football team this season in my eyes, because it's just, unless there's a rash of injuries, I mean, I could be wrong. I just, a kid that's a 22-year-old that's still looking to play maybe one or two more years of college football and is working his way to try to maybe get into a starting rotation, you know, we'll see if he can beat out Ferguson and Richie Leonard and who's the other guy? I keep forgetting the other guard.
Keandre Jones. But he's
Yeah. Like, he's got to go beat out those guys, man. And they played a lot more big boy football than he has. No ill will towards the FCS. But the Ivy League isn't the ACC.
Amen, brother.
There's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be a growing pains, probably. And I'm not counting on him to be a productive player this season. But it could happen. We'll see. I don't think they're counting on him to come in and win a starting spot. But the beauty that we know about this team, well, really college sports in general, and just sports in general typically, as long as a dad isn't the coach, it's a meritocracy, man. Mike Norvell isn't paid to lose games at all. Neither is Alex Atkins. He wants to be a head coach one day. He wants his offensive line to be awesome. Whoever gives him the best chance to do that, he will play. Then they will be a meritocracy, so he's got a chance to go win it. It's not like he's going to try to knock off Cam Irving and Walter Jones. He can go get himself a starting spot. I would just be surprised if he did.
I had him number 16 on my preseason.
I know you
top
did,
40.
Buddy. I know you're all you. You like you get him on the show, man.
I'll try.
It's an interesting story.
All right. So we also spoke to three prep incoming freshmen: Ricky Knight Jr. from the Benjamin School, also better possibly known as Jordan Travis's alma mater.
Oh, there you go. Right.
Yeah. We also spoke to, again, Makai Danzy, Tallahassee grown, been doing a lot of track, but getting ready and still lifting, but did admit he almost fell out the first week or so he was training with the team here. And then a young man by the name of Elijah Moore from Olney, Maryland. I think Ohio State had offered him, Penn State offered him, which is kind of, you know, that's the mark of excellence when you're in the DMV of the offers. I know Florida State likes to dabble in there every now and then, but like Ohio State and Penn State seem to always kind of lock down the best of the best in that geographical area. He enrolls late, so he's a little bit of a dark horse. Not a lot of people talking about him. He's not a five-star guy, but he is a four-star guy, Corey. And I don't know, in my older age, I don't like guys being braggadocious, but I like guys being braggadocious. But I also kind of fear for them. I don't want them to say things that's going to get thrown back in their face, because fans will do that. If a freshman's like, man, I have every intention of coming here and starting a games and catching 10 touchdowns. And if they drop a ball in a game, they'll be like, oh, hey, what happened to you catching 10 touchdowns? You can't even catch a first down for us. So I was fear for that. But man, he walked the line. I felt like his confidence level, his expectations, he spoke about what he saw last year, big bodied receivers like Keon and Johnny. You know, I asked him about, you know, the amount of reps or the lack thereof that he's going to get. How frustrating is that going to kind of be? And he took that as, man, I'm just going to have to dial in and be that prepared every single rep. And that's what I want. He sounded to me like a guy that, you know, it's one thing to have the head on the shoulders and then match it with the physical tools. And we'll see how the physical tools look like here in a few weeks. I'm bullish on the physical tools, and I'm so bullish on the mindset after hearing him speak on Wednesday.
Yeah, he was really impressive just talking. And obviously he's got film that's impressive, and he's impressive size. But the way he talked is the way you want your athletes to talk. Like, he didn't just come in and say, I'm going to win a job. He didn't just come in and say he's the best. What he came in and said that really caught my eye, and I led my story with it, was that he went to AZ. It's like, he went to Azariah Thomas, apparently, is what he said. He went to the cornerbacks. It's like, I want y'all's best. Don't take it easy on me. Which is a really mature thing to do, because I would imagine, I haven't watched any player-run practices. We're about to start watching practice in a couple of weeks. I imagine if Elijah Moore is matched up with AZ Thomas, at least for the first month, he will get owned by AZ Thomas. He just will. AZ Thomas has been Azariah's been up against better guys than him right now. He went up against Keon and Johnny all of last season. Elijah Moore, this true freshman coming in, probably isn't going to make him nervous. He's not going to be sweating in his boots. Oh, you got Elijah Moore. You got another four-star receiver to cover. He's covered some great receivers in his career. But I want to see if that happens. I want to see what that matchup is. And the fact that he went to the corners and said, don't take it easy on me because it makes me better. And I don't think that was just, you know, player speak. just this will be a good sound bite. It sounded like that actually happened. Because he mentioned it multiple times about wanting to work hard and be better, and he wants to be challenged, which is so that is such a healthy mindset to have. Now, he did say that he's the big body receiver. He was asked about what the veteran receivers have told him. Not that there's a ton of vets. I mean, Darian and Kentron are vets. Ja'Kai's a vet. There's a lot of new guys that have played some football elsewhere. But he was asked what they had told him, and they're like, man, get in the playbook. Learn the playbook. He goes, the heat's been hurting me a little bit. He admitted that. He's like, he's from Maryland. He's not used to this kind of heat. But then he said the main thing is just getting in the playbook. He goes, and he added, because, you know, there's opportunity for me. I can get on the field this year. There's an opportunity for me to play this year, which is so many freshmen come in, and we see it, especially at a good school that Florida State is now, they're not expecting to play a lot. Ricky Knight's not expecting to play a lot. I loved him, by the way, too.
Yes.
But I don't think he comes into this season thinking – he didn't go tell Malik, give me everything you got, man, because I can play this year. I don't think that's his mindset. And it's a different beast in that defensive backfield right now. There's some real dudes back there that are proven. He's probably going to have a hard time cracking the rotation as a true freshman, a late arriving true freshman. But man, Elijah Moore, he does have a chance to play, and he knows it. And don't you get the impression the coaches have told him that? Yeah. Like, man, get your butt in gear. Get your butt where it needs to be physically and mentally with the playbook. And you could play this year, man. You could maybe play even in Dublin. We'll see. He's really exciting to think about. He's going to be fun to watch for the first month to see how he adapts.
Absolutely. Well said. Ricky Knight, I liked how he gassed up every single wide receiver practically as a defensive back. That was really cool. Also, shout out to his auntie, who he wears on his chest on a chain. That's cool to see. He's got a driving force behind him. And then Mekhi just, he just said all the right things as a freshman, just, going to work hard and defer to the older guys in that talented backfield room. So very exciting, Corey. And we're going to do this, I think, two more times next week while you're on a big boat. But we'll figure out a way to get it all done, even though you'll be out on a big boat.
That's right. That's right. And by the way, I looked up Danzy's. His PR in the 100 is 10.57,
decent,
which is very good. But at the state track and field championships, he finished second in the 100 with a 10.68. But then he won the 200 and won the 400. He ran the 200 in 20.88, which I think if you're under 21 seconds as a high school kid, you're moving. And then the 400, he ran a 45.88. Those were both PRs on May 16th. So about 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, he was running the fastest he's ever run. So let's see how that translates to the football field in a few weeks.
All right, hey, let's get to some of these questions on the Renegade Express. We'll have another show for you folks tomorrow finishing it out, but we begin in Kentucky. Dave, bourbon is your friend. There was a time when fans were calling for Adam Fuller to be fired. Then the second half of the Louisville game in 21 happened. The defense began to play much better. Corey asked Norvell the infamous question. The whole team has been on an upward trajectory ever since. If my memory is correct, something happened with Adam during halftime that made Randy Shannon call plays in the second half of that game. That's an urban legend, I think. But I remember that. I remember that was like a narrative. They're like, oh, things got better in that game because Fuller stopped calling plays and it was Randy Shannon. Anyhow, now people are calling for Randy's head. And Adam is now beloved. So my question is just human nature to want some kind of sacrifice? If we sign a great linebacker, who's then going to be on the chopping block after that happens?
Yeah, it's just the nature of fandom, I think. Jeff and Ira started to get into an argument yesterday during headlines, and I nipped it in the bud because Ira brought up the fact that he and Tom recorded a video that's on our website, that's on our YouTube channel right now, defending Randy Shannon. And then Jeff was like, well, he was full Jeff mode. And then he's like, well, the linebacker, he's been atrocious. The linebacker's been atrocious. And Ira's counter was, they just went 13-0 with two pretty good linebackers. Right. But he doesn't get credit for that. And I'm like, guys, what are we doing? Let's answer another headliner question, and we did. Jeff can come out with his other video, another video. They can do a counterpoint and get the content really up in July. But, yeah, I mean, I just think that's fandom. I think that when you won 19 straight games, there isn't a lot to complain about. But we live in I sound like Jimbo, but talking about society. But we live in a complaining culture, and I'm there too, man. I complain all the time, so I get it. But yeah, so if something's not great, if something's not perfect, people want quick, easy, quick fixes, even at the expense of what you're trying to build. And yeah, man, Adam Fuller did not look good. The first year, he got a pass because it was COVID and that was just a nightmare. And then the next year, though, the way they looked against Wake Forest, it wasn't just Jacksonville State because that was on the offense. I mean, that last play was still preposterous. But then the way Wake went up and down the field in the first half, you get embarrassed by that offense. You give up 35 points, I think, in the first half and 300-something, 400 yards. They score on almost every drive, I think. And then you play Louisville the next game, and they have 5 touchdowns in the first half, something like that. Was it like 34-14?
That was gross. Yeah.
And so yeah, at that point, I was like, what is there? They don't. And it wasn't just they were giving up points because they're not talented. They were giving up wide open touchdowns, just easy ass touchdowns, guys running free in the middle of the field, all the time. It was just too easy. In whatever happened at halftime, I think the real answer is he cut down the rotation significantly. He quit letting guys play that shouldn't be playing, and he's like, "Hey, Jamie, we're going to move you to safety number one, and you're going to play 75 snaps. Get used to it. Do some cardio every day. You got to get used to this. We need you on Saturdays." But yeah, 3 years ago, Adam Fuller, people wanted to run him out of town, and that's right. Right now, he's beloved. He's considered one of people would be really upset if an SEC school was courting him. Please keep Adam Fuller. Please keep Adam Fuller. Yeah. The minute he gives up 35 in a game this year, it'll flip. It's like, we need a real defensive coordinator. He doesn't have it. So that's just kind of how it works, man, I think. It's odd. It's too bad. But it's also – it's not just the age we live in. It's also that everybody has a platform. Everybody has a voice. And if you're looking for those kind of comments, they are absolutely out there where, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, it'd have to be Joey at the water cooler for you to know that somebody was pissed off at Adam Fuller. And in Kentucky, who's talking about Adam Fuller? So you'd had no way to know that there were – or Randy Shannon. Who's talking about Randy Shannon in Kentucky? So you'd have no way of knowing that other fans were upset with him.
Speaking of complaining, random_John, good morning, Aslan and Corey. Thanks for doing this last mailbag before your day's off. Corey, it's been established on Seminole Headlines, War Chant Rap, that you like to poo-poo on certain sports subjects and thoughts. So, Corey, for the coming season, what is something that you would like to poo-poo for all the listeners? Something that just really makes you tense and squeeze your face with frustration because it makes you poo-poo that much. Same for you, Aslan.
I don't know. I don't think I have anything locked and loaded right now that I'm like. Maybe the linebacker discussion, but I also think it's valid. Like, we'll see what this linebacker group looks like, but if it's not, they're good at secondary, they're good on the defensive line. Are they good at linebacker? We'll see.
Can they
get better? We'll see. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe DJ too? Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, my concern, and this is, I guess, maybe less about Florida State, but it does obviously involve Florida State. But no one responded in the group text, so it hurt my feelings a little bit. But they had the Florida State takeover day between last time we recorded the show and now. Mm.
And on the ACC network.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're playing all the hits, beating LSU, which, I mean, I forgot that game was tied at halftime.
Yeah.
Destroyed them in the second half. But the Clemson game, and going back and looking at Clemson's roster and what they lost and who they've retained, they really haven't added a lot of people, obviously, because they don't like to go to the transfer portal. But, man, that offensive line was really beat up, and it showed. Not to take anything away from Florida State's disruptive nature as a whole that entire season last year. But, man, like Clemson, they were rotating guys in and out pretty much most of last season, but they've now got like a core five guys back. They've added Matt Luke as their offensive line coach, and he was the head coach at Ole Miss when Hugh Freeze got booted. He was the O-line coach at Georgia when they won their first national title. He was burnt out. That's why he stepped away from the game. But those paychecks, I guess, were too nice to walk away from for too long. Maffa's back. They've got, I don't have any special wide receivers, but that Antonio Williams kid did not play against Florida State. He was a freshman All-American in 2022. They've got more production by far at their wide receiver position than Florida State does. They've got some piece on the defensive line that are annoying. Barrett Carter's back. They've got two really solid safeties. All that to say, I'd kind of almost thought that we'd lapped Clemson. We've passed Clemson, but we have not lapped them. That game is going to be a lot more difficult than I anticipated 5 days ago, 5 weeks ago, and that now goes into that column with Notre Dame and Miami that you're like, this is gonna be really challenging. And I know a lot of people might be like, duh, it's Clemson, yeah. Aslan, but I've maybe thought that their demise was a lot more pronounced than it really is.
Well, no, it's still Clemson, man. They still got good players. I never was under the belief that like that was going to be an easy walk in the park. I mean, they beat him in overtime last year with Keon having to do an incredible catch and a ridiculous pass by the quarterback. A decision on second and an inch to throw it out wide was just a great play by Renardo, but it was just crazy to do, or whatever that third and inch. Yeah, Clemson's going to be hard, man. That's going to be a tough game. They've got good players. They've got good depth. Think about how good they could be, Aslan, if they cared about the portal.
Yeah.
So just be happy that they don't.
It's going to be also a nice juxtaposition because it's Mike Norvell trying – he's only got one shot to fix this with DJ, and then Cade Klubnik on year two of Garrett Riley, Lincoln's younger brother. So, like, right. Who's more the magician, right? Like, you know, year two continuity, Klubnik and Garrett Riley, is that more of a potent force than Mike Norvell and DJ in year one and only that he's got here? So, and again, like if Florida State wins that game, I think the narrative fully swings in Florida State's favor, which I think by and large it has. But man, if Clemson, you know, is able to pull that off somehow, then we're gonna get a whole bunch of Dabo-isms and BYOG and all that gross nonsense. So
yeah, sure.
Other gross nonsense, the SEC. Lots of questions about that. We start off with Dalvinism. Wake up if or when we leave the ACC. So this is a little bit tangentially related. What are the teams you will most miss seeing FSU play or travel to, not including Clemson or Miami, since we assume we'll most likely continue playing them? I was trying to think of an answer, and honestly, I could not think of one I would genuinely miss. And I think that says all that needs to be said about this conference. Thoughts?
Yeah.
I'm with you.
There isn't one.
No. I mean, Raleigh's decent. But like I'm not
the city. I mean, the city's fine, but you know what? It's I like Louisville, the city. I thought that you get to go to Churchill Downs. I like that little, whatever that Louisville Live thing is. Yeah, the 4th Street Live thing is. It's pretty cool. They got the Muhammad Ali Museum. Louisville Sluggers are made there. A lot of good stuff. But it's like, I can. It's not gonna pain me at all.
I'm gonna miss the food at ACC kickoff. They bring the heat every year. And they better do it this year because I just said this much. But I remember, man, like SEC media days was box lunch.
I was going to say, isn't it just probably Sonny's or something?
It's like RC Cola and Golden Flake chips still. Sure. Like, how cute. It's like, come on, man.
Yellowwood, you can get some lumber.
Yeah. Jimmy Rain, always trying to cut into everyone else's market share out there. Here's a question about the SEC I mean to bring up. It's Javi_Nieto. Good evening, gents. First time posting on here. I think that's how you pronounce the name. If I butchered it, Javi, I apologize. I was having a heated debate with a Florida fan who's a friend of mine that said essentially if Florida State made it to the SEC, they would not be able to handle it. He said they wouldn't be able to recruit against their competition and that we don't know what it's like to play Tennessee. He says UT, either one, touche, at night, or Auburn, Georgia, Bama. Of course, I strongly disagreed with him, but wanted to ask you guys, if we did get out of the ACC and made it to the SEC, or maybe the Big Ten, do you think we could compete right away, or would we be in for some sort of rude awakening? Mainly asking about the SEC because that's where we should go, but asking about the Big Ten as well. Thanks, guys. Scalp them. Outlandish.
Yes.
Outlandish. I'm sorry, Gary. Go ahead. It's ridiculous to think that Florida State cannot compete day one in the SEC.
Know what the conversation was, though, right? Like, are they going to go 12-0? Is our man Javi saying, the Noles would have gone 12-0. They'd have been 13-0 last year in the SEC, too.
Right.
Like, you can't.
Fair.
I don't know that you can say that. But come on, man. This ain't Vanderbilt. In Kentucky, Kentucky competes in the SEC, right? Wouldn't you say Kentucky is a competitive football program in that conference?
Yeah, if it wasn't for Georgia, they could probably have won the East, I think, like a few years.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're not a laughing stock.
No.
It's a pretty good program. It's a top 20, 25 program. Well, Javi, I can promise you this. Florida State is a better football program than Kentucky. Mm. And Kentucky doesn't get steamrolled every week either. Yeah. But, yes, of course, the week-to-week is harder. It is harder than playing at Boston College or at Pitt and following that up with a home game against Wake. Not taking anything away from those fine programs. Mm. But, yes, Ole Miss at home, at Tennessee, at Arkansas, Alabama at home, Georgia at home. That's a tough, tough schedule. But the beauty is you only got to win 75% of your games and you'll get to the playoff. The ACC, you basically got to win 100% or 90. You can lose three or four. You can definitely lose three games in the SEC and still make the playoff. So that's the trade-off. You know what I mean? That's the trade-off. Yes, you're not going to go undefeated, almost certainly. But if you only lose two or three times, you're almost guaranteed to be in the dance because you get so much credit for beating those other schools, and you get almost no angst. You get no demerits for losing to those schools. So it's the best of both worlds. If Florida could get its act together, it could be in the playoff. But they're probably about to fire their coach in a, what we'd say, Aslan, 5 months, 4 months? Probably 4 months he'll be fired.
I wonder, like, right now, like, blind resume, not including, obviously, winning your championship game, because that gets you into the playoff. Like, you'd rather be a 9-3 SEC team than a 10-2 ACC team if you wanted to make it into the playoff.
Or is that 100%. 100%. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
But obviously, if you win your conference game, then you're in, so that renders it moot. But yeah,
like, if Florida State is 11-1 next year and they go lose in Charlotte, now maybe they're a different example because of what happened last year. But if North Carolina was 11-1 and lost in Charlotte, no chance they get selected. None. But there will be two or three SEC teams, probably two, that get selected that don't even make the championship game. That, again, that's the benefit of getting to play in that conference. But, yes, of course, it's going to be tougher. Either one of those would be tougher than what Florida State is currently dealing with.
And I can't even wrap my head around Javi's friend said that Florida State would not be able to recruit against their competition.
Come on, man. It's crazy.
If anything, I actually think that it would be beneficial to Florida State because they are involved so many times with kids from Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana. And it's hard to get those guys to leave those states that have those programs to come to Florida State to play Wake and Syracuse.
Yep.
Yeah, man, you tell the kid in New Orleans, yeah, man, you're going to play LSU, you're going to play Bama, you're going to play Tennessee, you're going to play Texas, and you can come to this school.
Aslan, how about the kid in Gwinnett County?
Yeah.
That keeps Benedict Arnolding this program every 2 years. The hotshot DBs from Gwinnett County.
Yeah.
They'll go play in the SEC, man.
Yeah. No. Well said. Say something really well about the fine folks over at Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Corey, where you can get daily lunch specials from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. for only $8.99 every single day of the week.
You know what's great about Corner Pocket? So I was there playing trivia on Tuesday night, finished in second, so I was happy about that. The tiebreaker question was the month, day, and year that Lion King was released.
Oh, my gosh.
Give me your best guess on that after I'm done with this spiel. But so we're playing trivia. One of the Barbara, one of our teammates, is of Argentinian descent. I think half Argentinian, half French, maybe. I can't quite remember. But anyway, she wants the Argentina game on because, you know, it's Copa America. And literally, but maybe it's because we know Bill. I don't know. But within five, no, it wasn't because Bill didn't even do it. We go to our waitress and we say, hey, can we get that Vegas wall that's just got all the MLB games on? Can we switch that to the Copa America game? Within 2 minutes, it's switched. It wasn't because, oh, that's Corey Clark's table. It's just somebody asked the TV to be switched. They all can do it. They all can use the iPad and switch the TVs. You don't have to go call corporate offices to get the TV switched. And it takes 45 minutes and the meal's over by the time they switch to the game. They can get it done very quickly. And obviously, good food and cheap alcohol, which is a great combination.
Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, CP Tally Bar, 2475 Appalachie Parkway.
What was the, did you come up with a guess for Lion King?
Man, was I in middle school? I'm going to go, I don't know, like July 13th, 1996?
Oh, no, it was, we said June 20th, 1994. June 20th because it was Brady's birthday. One of our, Barbara's husband, was adamant that it was 1994. He had a reason for remembering. I can't remember what it was.
Okay.
But he knew it was 1994. He knew exactly what time of life it was for him. Yeah. And he was right, summer. So we put June 20th, 1994. The other team put June 18th, 1994. And the answer was June 24th, 1994.
Boom, Price is right at him.
Yep, we got it right.
$1. So, I'm going to go with one, Bob.
So we did it. So, well, we had to get the year right. We nailed it.
All right, moving along here now, Corey. And, I mean, just go ahead and do it. Fire up the generators. Fire up the cameras. It's time to generate discussion, generating discussion sparked by Cummins. Follow them over on Instagram, Cummins Lifestyles, all one word. Best question each week showcased in this segment. They get entered into a drawing to win a free swag bag every month and a grand prize drawing at the end of the year for either a portable generator or a portable battery. Shout out to the portable battery, the PS1000, helped me out on Wednesday. We lost power before we went and spoke to those players earlier in the day, Corey. I need my breakfast. I was able to get my toaster oven working so I could get my toast, made my eggs. So I got a gas range. All worked out. Cummins, they're awesome, everybody. Do it. This one's a little bit of a tricky one, Corey. I'm gonna pop the question on the screen, but I had to parse it down because it was hard to get all the words on here. But it comes from our guy, C Swizzle 8. For some reason, the font I use does not have an underscore in it. But he says, hey, guys, if you could pick one position group other than quarterback. All right, so move that. One position group to exceed preseason expectations, but you have to pair that with a position group that's going to underperform, but you still want to make it to the playoffs. Okay. What two position groups would you choose? I think clearly the one that we would need in this scenario to outkick their coverage, to exceed expectations, it's wide receiver, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think so, because you don't know what you have. You don't have any idea what you have. Ja'Kai's a nice player, but he's not a star wide receiver. Malik Benson could be. Heck, Elijah Moore could be. We have no idea. So you go into this, literally, I would say wide receiver or linebacker are the two positions where you have the least expectations. And I do think just using those two, the wide receiver is the position I think is more likely to exceed. And maybe Hakeem Williams or somebody has a breakout year. Maybe two of them do. Maybe Darian Williamson and Portier can stay healthy and fulfill some of their potential and promise. So I would say wide receiver seems like the automatic answer for the one that has to succeed or exceed expectations.
All right.
The other one.
Someone's going to have to underperform in this situation, though. Which one can you get? I think we have really high expectations for the defensive line. If we were to say the defensive line does not meet expectations, they are underperforming, but this receiving core ends up having Hakeem and Malik Benson just be like an absolute dynamic duo. Is that still good enough to get into the playoff with this schedule? Or do you not want to, is the defensive line too important of a position to fox around within this scenario?
Yeah, the line of scrimmage is too important for either scenario there. So, no, I don't think you could get to a playoff if the defensive line underperforms. That group needs to be good to special, like dominant almost. That group needs to be really – I mean, those two tackles, we think the defensive ends are going to be, if they stay healthy, really, really productive and dynamic. That group needs to do what it needs to do. I would say, honestly, the whole defense, I wouldn't take anything. I wouldn't say secondary either. Like, they need to play up to their expectations. They don't need to play below. If either one of those groups, secondary we think is really good, defensive line is really good. If it turns out one of them isn't, this probably won't be a playoff team because they're not good enough. They're not exceptional enough in the other areas to withstand a bad secondary or a mediocre secondary or a mediocre defensive line. I think they could withstand – I don't even know how you would gauge this – but I think they could withstand mediocre running back play.
Okay.
If the wide receivers are better than we think, and DJ doesn't count as a running back, but if he's the one that can grind you out first downs and short yardage touchdowns, then maybe you don't have anything special. Maybe the dip off from Trey Benson to these guys is even greater than we think, and there isn't a great running back right now. Like, Cam Davis might be awesome, but he's a freshman. No, but this running back room doesn't turn out to be as good as we think it is for this year. I still think you can you can manage to get to the playoffs.
Mix and match the is it permeations or permutations?
I feel like both.
Okay.
Yeah. It's permutations. Endless. It's permutations. Yeah.
It's endless, everybody. You can pick, you know, you can pick maybe the defensive backs to overperform, and then for some reason the pass catchers don't, and you're just going to have like some really ridiculous defense that's going to carry you the day. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's your combination? Post in the comments below. Get involved with the show. Every single week we do this. Generating discussion sparked by Cummins. Cummins Lifestyle on Instagram. Follow them, everybody. We go to our guy down there in Naples, Mark M. Adam CZ. Wake up. Kind of tired about the chatter about recruiting rankings, whiffing on this linebacker recruit. Let's focus on 19 straight wins and this new version, fantastic version of Florida State football that Mike's created in only 3 years. Recruiting on the lines is getting back to FSU standard. Offensive line, defensive line can't win championships without those consistently performing at a high level. It feels like they would have been able to handle Washington in any kind of bowl game. Probably had a good chance of beating Michigan too had Jordan been good to go. However, I would like to see a Jameis-caliber quarterback walk through those doors in the very near future. Way more important than Randy landing a couple of four-star linebackers. Do you guys think that a generational quarterback will say yes to Florida State soon? Even Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams-esque. That would put this train back on top of the mountain. And our John Lennon of the all-time FSU Beatles has to be Janikowski. Randy Moss is Pete Best. I agree, Corey.
Okay, good. That was a headlines. That was a headlines question.
Little headlines right at the crossover. End there.
Right. Yeah, Jeff didn't even give us any warning at all. He's like, hey, somebody wants to know if you can bear all the greats. Instead of doing a Mount Rushmore, who are the four Beatles of Florida State football? I was like, oh, my gosh. So, yeah.
Generational, just like slam dunk the guy.
I mean, you just had a pretty darn good one. Was he Jameis? No, but he was pretty damn special, man. And he played, he won you 17 straight games, I guess. But man, that he was good.
You're killing me on this, Corey. I feel like one day you're like, well, you know, Jordan wasn't as amazing as we, you know, expect him to be. He was good, you know, but and then it's like, oh, he was amazing.
His numbers can be easily replicated, right? But even like I was thinking about the Boston College game. As Boston College seemed to be driving down for the game-winning score, in the back or a field goal, I'm like, you know what? Florida State's got some timeouts left. Even if they kick this field goal, I trust that 13's going to get them down the field for their own field goal attempt. I just did. Mm. I just trusted in that guy to make plays when he absolutely had to make them. I don't know. That's not generational, but that's a guy that you can't count on that all the time, man. You see quarterbacks all the time. You know, the guy that's coming here, who I think is good, he lost four times last year. He's lost, if you go back to the South Carolina game, this isn't really fair, but he's lost, he's 8-5 in his last 13 games. Jordan Travis, again, won 17 in a row. Now, one of those was a one-point loss to South Carolina, and then I should also add, he was 10-1 in his previous 11 before that. The guy's won. He's 30-10 as a college starter. He's in, you know, 12 of those were at Oregon State, which isn't exactly a football power. But the point being, you know, I don't know that we don't know right now that DJ has that special in him. That I just always, it was always like something in your back pocket. Like, okay, you still got Jordan, man. If everything else breaks down, if you don't have any wide receivers, you still got, I mean, Jordan Travis threw for more yards in the Pitt game than any other game without Keon and Johnny. So he just had some special stuff to him, man. But he wasn't generational, not in that context, not in the Jameis context. I don't know. If the only way for Florida, and I don't think this is how the question was framed, but the only way that Florida State can compete or win a national championship, and I don't think that's what Mark Minter said, is for a generational quarterback, then that can't be. I do think this program is in a place where he don't have to be generational. He didn't have to be the number one overall pick. He didn't even have to be a first-round pick. I think they can put enough good people around him, and this team is so well coached that they can go win and compete or win a national championship with, let's say, a second-round quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's but, yes, I get it. It's been a while since they had a guy that was, like, Heisman-worthy. Mm. It's been 10 years. So, yes, it would be cool if they got another Heisman-worthy quarterback. Maybe DJ is going to make a Jaden Daniels-type jump, and this will be his year to do that.
I do think generational quarterback, at least for Florida State with Mike Norvell being here, it's going to have to be a high school guy.
Probably,
I don't think it'll be a good transfer. And Caleb was only because Lincoln Riley recruited him from the high school
level. Jaden Daniels wasn't like, oh, my God, Jaden Daniels left? Oh, I mean, I know he had started a lot of games at Arizona State, but he was pretty mediocre, especially that last year. Nobody, I don't think there were that many fans at Arizona State that were sad to see him go. So, but the point being, you don't usually get those guys to transfer. No. The great ones, the obviously great ones, like the Caleb Williamses, they don't typically transfer. Now, obviously, Caleb Williams did, but as Aslan said, it's because his coach left. But so he wanted to go play for Lincoln Riley.
If you think about it, though, man, Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, I mean, I guess LSU probably wants, like, sole credit for it. But both those guys were not really, you know, they were transfers that were like, this is, at least Jaden Daniels, I think, had more of a, like, accomplishments in his back pocket. Like, all right, like, we know what we have, and if we can tweak him a little bit, we'll be good. Joe Burrow was like a complete unknown, so maybe I shouldn't totally discount that for Mike Norvell, but I would
I guess if I could restate it so I don't look like a complete buffoon, because Joe Burrow is a great example, I mean guys that are obviously great in ready-made, all-star, all-American, first-round pick type quarterbacks. Typically, those aren't the guys that transfer. They stay in their system.
That said, though, like, do we think it's more likely that Mike turns a DJ from a good college football player into an incredible college football player, or is it him impressing an 18-year-old kid and his family with, you know, hey, man, I did it with this kid and this kid and this kid, like, and this place is running on all cylinders, and it's an amazing place to be. You need to come here day one. We'll groom you, and then we're going to do this thing, you know, from the ground level up.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. There's not any samples, right? There's no sample size there. He's had Jordan since he's been here. It's been Jordan Travis. So, in you know, a host of others here and there, some bit players, some role players, but by and large, it's been Jordan Travis. So, I don't know. I don't know. He certainly doesn't have a resume that says he's going to turn a high school quarterback into a first round pick. That has not happened. And he hasn't been places long enough for him to do that. But he's produced some really good and productive college quarterbacks for a variety of different ways. But I don't know that that's something you could sell. If I'm a dad and Brady's a hotshot 18-year-old quarterback, I don't know that I look at Mike Norvell's offense or Mike Norvell's history and be like, well, I got to go there because look what he does to all these other quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I would have to believe in Norvell and the offense, not what, because the track record isn't there yet. Yeah. It's not that it can't get there. The tracks just haven't been laid yet like they have for other coaches.
Yeah, and it's just like the bummer on top of the bummer. Like if Jordan stays healthy and let's just say like wins one game, like makes it to the national title game, but you know they lose 28-27 to Michigan.
The premise that They would have made it if Jordan was healthy.
I'm not crazy.
But go ahead. Yeah. If they win one of those games.
Is he's second round pick then probably, right? I mean,
I don't think that stuff matters, man. I don't think that like one win over Alabama or Michigan.
His injury though. I mean, the injury is moving him out in the sixth round is what I'm trying to say.
Like, probably.
If he finishes out the season, you know, and then I wonder how much that affects the way you're viewed as like being a, but listen, I mean, hopefully families realize what Jordan was when he got here, what he was when he left, and then, you know, can kind of connect those dots. But I get it.
And let's see what happens with DJ. If DJ becomes like a second-day pick, you know, again, that's a feather in the cap. It's not a huge feather. It's not Jimbo with whatever it was, four straight first-rounders. No. But it's another sizable feather into the cap. You keep putting quarterbacks in the league. Whether they come to you late or come – like Jordan Travis, he was a transfer, but not really, man. You know what I mean? Like he was developed under Mike Norvell. That's another feather in the cap. Now you turn DJ into a second-day pick. That's another feather in the cap that you can keep showcasing to these recruits and their families.
All right, last one, off topic. Aslan, what was one Irish dish you enjoyed when visiting last year that you would recommend to someone making the trip next month? Corey, what drugs are you taking for the transatlantic flight? Can I have some?
No. Wouldn't that be illegal? I guess if I don't sell them to you.
It's still prescription.
What is that? For prescription meds, is that a crime to not sell them?
Right.
Just give some to a friend?
I don't know. I mean, my mom gave my brother like a Xanax or something for his flight to...
That's the answer, by the way, I think. And I'm getting it from a friend. I don't have a prescription for it. I'm getting it from a friend to fly over there. But is that a... I'm not giving away any names.
Substance.
By the way, scratch all this. I didn't say any of this. But I don't know that that's a crime, right, to loan somebody a prescription drug. It's not meth.
Right. No.
I don't know.
You're fine.
It's a gray area, right? It's a gray area.
Yeah.
Don't give it to your kids.
Man. So here's the thing about Ireland. I did have fish and chips from a place out in East Dunmore. It's a very small fishing village. So just Google... whatever it was, just Google like fish and chips, East Dunmore, Ireland. And I think
they like Lay's potato chips?
They're like Ruffles. They had ridges.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
So that was good. I'm not a big fish guy. I'm not a big fried foods guy, but it was solid. And here's the thing. So for a little bit, I was being a little bit critical in some of my summations to friends about the cuisine out there in Ireland. With the exception of sole. Sole out there, S-O-L-E.
Yeah.
I'm not a big seafood
guy. I love sole.
Their food was really, really good. Also, fire there, they had like a lamb chop, like lollipop lamb chop appetizer that slapped.
Were you saying the restaurant's name was Sole?
Yes, S-O-L-E.
Oh, I thought you were saying the fish Sole.
No, but that's also a fish, okay. Too. You're right. Yeah.
Okay.
So Sole and Fire. Those are the two places we went to have dinner at.
About Earth and Wind?
I know, right?
Jeez.
It was July, though, not September. So the beef. I wasn't a big fan of some of the steaks I had out there. And I'm really not a big fan of a lot of the steaks I have in America, so maybe take that for what it's worth. I just feel like a lot of restaurants don't put a proper amount of like coarse salt on your steak core and create that kind of needed sear, like that char on the outside of your steak. But somebody was explaining to me that it's all about like fat and salt when it comes to steak. Didn't feel like I was getting a lot of either of those in any of the steaks out there. And then somebody was explaining to me that it's my fault, me, because I'm an American and all of our cattle is like mass produced on farms and it's not the most like ethically sourced, well-fed beef out there. So that's why like the Irish beef has a distinctly different beef flavor. It is more beefy because it's like smaller scale farming. They're being fed a different diet that's better and more nutritious or whatever. So it's going to create a different flavor beef. Which it might be. It might actually be like, I don't know, like the beef council of the universe might actually dictate that Hereford beef in Ireland is better than whatever we have here in America. But for me, that I'm, you know, I have a certain palate that I'm used to having hit when I chew into a steak. I didn't get that out there. But hopefully I gave you enough other suggestions that'll make up for it. The Guinness is really good too. It does taste different.
And they have McDonald's over there, right?
There's a Persian joint out there that I found. In like down somewhere in metropolitan
Dublin. They do have McDonald's though, right?
Probably. I didn't remember seeing
one.
Yeah,
they got to. All right. Yeah. They got to, right?
Yeah.
So McDonald's everywhere. They're going to have some chain restaurant. Dublin's a huge city, so they're going to have some chain restaurants you probably recognize. Not that I'm going there. I'm not taking a stand for McDonald's, but I feel like if the local cuisine, like Irish food, isn't your thing, it's a big enough city that they're going to have all types. It's like going into Atlanta, right? Like, you can go get an Italian meal. You can go get a Mexican meal, I assume. You could go to McDonald's. There's going to be some options.
And I think...
Just apparently don't try the beef.
Well, maybe your palate's different, everybody. Maybe you'll enjoy it a little bit more than I did. But I guess apparently Ireland is relatively affordable compared to, like, other major, like, capitals in Europe. So they have a decent amount of, like, international flavor to their... So there's... Again, like it's not just going to be fish and chips and, you know, whatever, shepherd's pie.
Right.
There's all sorts of like immigrant, enclaves that have their own like cuisine. So you'll be able to check all that stuff out. Let me know if you're out there,
Journal. A cheesecake factory for everyone, right? Or TGI Fridays, something like that.
Quick story on that. When we were in Atlanta for the 5-star challenge back in our Rivals Day in 18, was me, Langston, I think even Gene attended. And I crowdsourced. I'm like, we're staying in Buck Lake or Buckhead. Buckhead, right?
Buckhead, yeah.
We're saying Buckhead, like, give me a recommendation for food. And everybody starts throwing out all these, like, you know, exotic place I've never heard of. And then, like, Michael and Gene are like, let's just go to Cheesecake Factory. And then I respond, I'm like, go to Cheesecake Factory. And everybody was so disappointed in me. They're like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah. I've never been
before.
What
can you do?
I've never been before.
It's a big menu. It's like a phone book.
My God, it's incredible. Too much. We might have spoke too much on this show. But we'll have another one for you tomorrow. Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock. He's Corey Maslon. Thanks for listening to Wake Up War Champ, presented by Vitamin Energy.